Hello everyone, welcome to Geotech. So in this video we're going to be looking at the IGCSE ICT paper 1. We'll be looking at chapter 1, which is types and components of computer system. In this chapter we'll be looking at hardware, software, looking at the internal and the external, the operating system, the backup, types of computers, amazing technologies, as much as possible. This is going to be more like a summary, so you can just know what you need to do, especially when questions have been asked on chapter 1. Okay? So, computer systems are now commonplace in every part of our daily lives. Pardon? In every field, in every sector, there is a computer that you need to work with. Okay? And this chapter talks about the computer system, right? And we talked about basic components like our internal and external on it. Let's look at hardware. We'll talk about hardware in the simple terms. They are the physical components that make up a typical computer system. That is what hardware is. Physical components that makes up a typical computer system. Let's give an example. We have the keyboard, we have the mouse, we have the camera, we have the monitor, we have the pointer, we have the plotter. Notice that in the textbook, it has been separated as the input and it has been separated as the output. In the course of this video, we're going to be looking at the input and we're also going to be looking at the output. Now, the hardware falls under two categories. We have the internal and then the external. Okay. Now, let's look at those internal hardwares, right? Internal hardwares are those components that are found inside the system unit. Remember, the system unit is like a casing, right? That houses all components of the computer system. Okay, so now, let's look at those internal components. We have motherboard. We have the central processing unit, we have, which is a CPU, right? Or what you call your processor. We have the random access memory. Okay, we also have the read-only memory, which is your ROM. We have your graphics card, we have your sound card, you have your network interface card. And then you have your internal storage devices, your internal storage devices, talking about. It could be that you have a hard disk drive, talking about your HDD, or it could be that you have the solid state drive. So these are those components that are found inside. In more in-depth, you could actually look at all this, talking about the motherboard. Now, a motherboard is a printed circuit that is found on all computers, right? It allows processor and all other computer hardware to function and communicate with each other. In the case of the random access memory, we see it as an internal chip where data is temporarily stored when running applications. Okay. Then we have the read-only memory. The read-only memory talks about, which is used to store information that needs to be permanent. That's the read-only memory. But in the random access memory, which is the internal chip where data is temporarily stored, when running applications. So for the RAM, which is the random access memory, they are temporarily stored, and for the ROM, they are, you know, they store information that is permanent, that needs to be what? Permanent. The CPU, on the other hand, is a processor, right? Which you know it as a processor, is more or less an electronic circuit board that can execute instructions. And of course, they can execute instructions from a computer program. Now, we have those main components. We have the ALU and we have the CU, right? So the ALU talks about the arithmetic and logic unit, where it performs a kind of hardware arithmetic and logical, basic arithmetic and comparison. And then you have your control unit, which takes instructions and then decodes and executes that instruction. Okay, now these are all the internal. Do we have the network interface card? It basically allows you to, it connects your devices to a network, right? It could be wired, it could also be what? Wireless, right? So that component, when you have it in your system, it allows the system to be able to see a network. Okay. The graphics card, on the other hand, allows computers to be able to send what we call graphical information to a video display, such as a monitor, or television, or your projector. Sound card. A sound card, on the other hand, is an integrated circuit, okay, that provides a computer with the ability to produce sounds. Okay, so when you have a sound card in your computer system, it enables you to be able to produce sounds, right? Then your internal hard disk drive and your solid state drive, on the other hand, are no, it will be covered in more in depth, but they allow you to be able to store your information. Okay, that the backbone, they store your information on the computer. Okay, and the new one, which is solid state, is what we call a flash memory. Why your hard disk drive uses the magnetic. Okay, then let's look at, you can see them in pictures right here. This is the motherboard, this is the ROM, this is the RAM, this is the graphics card, this is the SSD, sound card, the HDD. Okay, so this is what stores it, right? This is the CD here that stores the information, and this is the flash memory. Okay, so it's important to be able to see a visual, you know, to help you to remember what which of them is which. Okay. All right, so we're looking at software. Okay, we'll look at software. Now, when we look at software, they are programs that can control your computer system and process the data. That's what they are, right? Yeah. In fact, it's a general term used for programs, right, that can control the computer system, and then they can process the data. Okay, so we have two types of these softwares. Seeing that they are programs that can control the system and then process the data, we have two types. We have the application software that allows the user to solve a given task, right? More or less, it provides a service that allows the user to solve a given task. And then we have the, what we know already, the system software. Okay, so let's look at those examples for the application software. Word processing, spreadsheet, word processing on your MS Word, Google Docs, right? Spreadsheet, Excel, sheets, a lot of them, right? We have the Quattro, we have the iWork numbers, right? For database, we have your Access, you have your MySQL, you have your Oracle, a lot of them. Okay, video editing, so a lot of video editing is like Adobe Pro. Okay, you have your graphic editing like your CorelDRAW, Paint.net, Photoshop's, etc., etc. But for system softwares, they are software designed to provide a platform on which all other softwares can run. Note the difference. Why the application software, right, is that program that can provide a service for user to perform a given task. The system software, on the other hand, is that software that is designed to provide that platform on which all other softwares can work. That is the system software. That is the easiest way to put it. Example, we have the compiler, we have the linkers, the device drivers, we have the operating system, and we have the utility. So we have all of them here, examples of what each of them can do as much as possible. Okay? So, and also the compilers and the linkers. So for linkers, compilers, I think you've talked about this, but I'm just going to talk about them as much as possible. For your compilers, is a computer program that translates a program written in high-level language and into a machine language, right? That is understood by the computer. Then we have the linkers that talks about computer program that takes one or more object files and that is being produced by a compiler. Okay. And then device drivers talks about name given to software that enables one or more hardwares to to communicate with the computer operating system. Then the operating system itself, yes, is the backbone of the computer, right? So essentially, software that is running in the background of the computer system. Okay, and yeah, without the OS, most computers would not be user friendly, right? Because it means that you need to understand binary to actually operate the computer. So they are more graphic in nature. And then we have utilities that has to design to carry out specific tasks such as antiviruses, maintaining and controlling your computer resources. And I'm going to stop here. The next video will look at analog and digital computers. I will move from there. Thank you. Hello everyone, and welcome to Geotech. So we're going to continue from the types and component of computer system. Okay, and we're going to continue from analog and digital data. We talked about in chapter one, talked about episode one, if you want to call it that way, because we're in chapter one. We talked about the hardware and the software. Now we want to talk about analog and digital. So when we talk about that computers can only understand data which is in binary form, we're simply talking about digital data. Okay, that is what a computer can understand. You can understand data in binary form, which is like base two, like zeros and one. Those are the values. But in the case of analog, they are like real world data, right? In the sense that the major physical quantities. Okay. The major physical quantities, that is analog, right? So there are physical data that can change, okay, from one value to the next. It is not in discrete, it's not in zeros and one. It is just measured in physical quantities. Okay? Alright. Now they said if the analog data is being sent to the computer, it is first converted into the digital data. And I'm going somewhere with this. Trust me, this is going to make a whole lot of sense when we get to what we call sensors. That is in our input and output devices in chapter two. It's going to make a whole lot of sense. So hold on to this. Hold on to this in your heart, right? Because it's going to make a lot of sense, right? So if analog data is being sent to a computer, it must first be converted into digital data. Now, this is done by a hardware known as the analog to digital converter, what we call the ADC, right? So if the computer is controlling a device, such as, let's say, for example, a motor, right? Then the digital output from the computer needs to be converted into the analog form. And this is now done by a digital to analog converter. So whenever you want to send in physical quantities, that's it, right? Whenever you want to send in physical quantities, right? You send in using the analog digital converter, right? But if the computer is controlling a device, such as a motor, an outlet, an actuator, right? Then the digital output from a computer is then converted into the analog form that will make that mechanical device to move, right? Either in the form of a rotary or in a linear movement. Okay, so if you talk about in the form of the rotary, it revolves round and round and round and round. But in the case of the linear, it just goes straight, kind of like a door, right? Your supermarket doors, right? So it opens, it closes. Whenever it senses the presence of a human, or it senses a presence, it opens, and when there's no presence, it closes, right? So it is what we call the motion sensor, right? And yeah, that is what it took, right? You know, it came early. It came early. So we can be glad that it did, right? So that when it actually comes, we can just have understanding to. So hold on to this. It's a very, very important piece. And the next one is the main component of computer systems. So let's look at the main component of the computer system. Now, a typical computer system is made up of what? Your hardwares and your softwares. Okay? Now, Let's look at those devices, and let's look at examples of them. Yeah, we're talking about the main component of the computer system. Right, so it's made up of both the hardware and the software. Now we have, let's say, input. Okay, so for input, for example, we have input devices, which is to send data to the computer system. If you're wondering what it is, we have a keyboard, a mouse, cameras, microphone, sensors. You see what I did there? Sensor, scanner, because sensors, they help to be able to send this data. And this is done usually with the help of the analog to digital converter, right? Then we have the scanner. Then we have the output devices, right? The output devices, for example, we have the monitor, we have the printer, we have the speaker, we have the projector, we have the plotter. Okay, what you can see like your graph, and then we have like plotter. So you see that's a graph, you see that's a plotter. Then we have the secondary, like auxiliaries, okay? Your secondary storage devices, like your hard disk drive, your solid state drive, your pen drive. So yeah, those are just those major components. Now, they said the internal hardware that we've seen. Now let's look at their device. They consist of four key components, okay? So let's look at them. We have the CPU, which is contained in the motherboard. We have the internal hard disk drive or solid state drive, because notice that every system coming with this, it comes with what we call the solid state drive. Now you're wondering, what is this matter? How do we even know a system that has a solid state drive? Yes, we know it's on our laptop, but how do we even know? How are we even sure that my laptop is having a solid state drive? I got you covered. Trust me, I got you covered. We're going to explore this right about now. So what you're going to do is this: click on the control panel. Okay, then categories, don't forget. Then again, systems down here, defragment and optimize your drive. If you click here, you're going to see that, notice my media type. I have a hard disk drive and I have a solid state drive. This is one of the ways you can know what kind of internal storage device you have. If it's a solid state drive or if it's a hard disk drive. I hope that makes sense, right? Okay, so let's go. All right, now we have the random access memory, which is your RAM, and then you have your ROM. Okay, now remember, these are internal hardware devices. Like you can't actually see them unless you actually dismantle them, like literally your motherboard. Okay, so they're all embedded here, and this is the ones you can see, like your monitor, the printer, your keyboard, and of course, your mouse. Hope you're having fun with this. Now, your CPU. We've talked about your CPU, right? It is a part of the computer that can interpret and execute the commands from the computer hardware, the software. So it's that part. They help to interpret, they help to execute. Remember, it's not the only one doing that. There are so many components that are part of the CPU, right? So it is normally part of the computer motherboard. Now, it is made up of these components I'm about to talk about, okay? And we see the CPU is often referred to as your microprocessor, which is like a single integrated circuit. And people see it as, it's often, some textbooks see it at the heart of most PCs or people. Yeah, they said some textbooks will tell you, or some articles will tell you, that it does major work of the computer. And this is true. Okay, it's funny enough, because some textbooks could see the motherboard as the CPU, but there are two different things, right? There are two different things. Okay. Okay, so let's look at it. Now, the CPU is made up of the control unit. Now, the control unit controls the input and output devices in the system. We have the arithmetic and logic unit, which is an ALU, right? So, which carries out a form of calculations and makes form of logical decisions, comparison, and then we have what we call the registers. Okay? All right. Then, internal memory. Now, let's pause a break here and let's look at this category color. Now, for internal memory, we have the random access memory. We have the read-only memory. Okay, that's what we have. Now, the random access memory, right, which is the internal chip, where data is stored temporarily when running applications. Okay, now these memories can be written to, it can be read from. Okay, now another thing we need to know about the RAM is, the contents are lost when there is a power failure. And that's why we refer to them as volatile or temporary memories. In the case of the ROM, it's not so, because the ROM stores information that needs to be permanent. It means it often contains, right? So it's permanent in nature. Whatever information is stored is permanent. And this is configurations of data for your computer systems, right? So the chip that is used for like the ROM cannot be altered and can only be read from. Hence the name, read only, right? Can only be read from. So it cannot be written to. So one of the main advantage of the ROM is that the information stored on them is not lost, whether it's a power failure or not. And that's why we see them as a permanent memory or non-volatile. Okay. Now let's look at the BIOS, which is the basic input and output, right? And now the ROM contains some coding known as the boot files, where the operating system loads from, which is, and this is referred to as the basic input and output system. So when a computer is turned on, this is what the BIOS does. It carries out what we call hardware checks to find out if all the devices are present and whether they are functional, and then it loads the operating system into the random access memory. Where you didn't see that coming? Yeah, I know. Now, the BIOS stores the date, the time, system configurations in a non-volatile chip called what we call the CMOS. And the CMOS is known as the complementary metal oxide semiconductors. And this is usually battery powered. Okay? Now, it's too much. I know this information is looking too much. So let's break it all down. Okay, between the RAM and ROM, I think that will make a whole lot of sense to people like, oh, this he's just saying so many things. I know. Trust me, this will be second nature by the time you listen to this over and over and over again. Now, the RAM is a temporary memory device. The ROM is a permanent memory device. Okay, see? Cool, right? The other one is, it is a volatile memory. Why the ROM is non-volatile memory. The next one is, it can be written and read from. It's random access. But from ROM, which is read only, from the name, it is only read only. It means data cannot be altered. When something is written, means it can be altered. But when something is read only, it means it cannot be altered. And of course, it is used to store data, file, programs, operating system currently in use. It can be increased in size. Yeah, sure. It can actually increase it, right? What do I mean? This. Control, alternate, delete, task manager. And then we can have this. Now, you can see your memory right here, right? You can see your CPU, which is your control, your central processing unit. And then you can see your things, right? Internal memory. And then you can see that this is a lot of memory that is actually being carried out right now, okay? And you can see that the ones that are like your Windows Explorer is actually using like 71 MB, Task Manager like 80, Microsoft Edge, is my Microsoft Edge? Yep, it is, I'm using it, okay. And a whole lot of them is ongoing. Omen Gaming Hall. I don't know what that is, it's not open here, but I'm trusting. Probably let me see. Oh, it's a command center, so it's not like it's like game. I was only because I don't have that on my laptop. So we have them here, right? And so many of them. Okay. And you can actually check to know the numbers of RAM you have. You can just type in system information and then click on open, and then you can see your system information. And if right here you can see how many RAMs you have. They come down right here, you should be able to see it. You can see your boot device, where it's booting from. You can see your total physical memories. You can see your installed physical memory, which is your RAM, 8 GB. And you can see the physical memory. You can see the total virtual memory, which is 22. My virtual, available virtual for me, page, file space, a lot in system information. It gives you an idea to be able to know how your system is operating. Okay, and if you're wondering what's the username, you can see right here, the username, right? Okay, for those who are using commands, CMD, to do some things like change files, open some files, you need that, right? To know where it is. Okay. Okay, now, for the ROM, it is used to store the BIOS and other details needed at startup. Remember, it stores in your date, your time, system configurations, and yes, and in what we call non-volatile chip, right, called your CMOS. Input and output device, trust me, it's just a summary. We're going to explore this in depth. We were talking about chapter 2. Okay, just stick with me on this, okay? Now, your input devices are hardware that allow data to be entered into the computer, right? We'll cover that in chapter 2, like I said, right? And we have a lot of them. We have input data, we have direct data entry. We'll talk about that, okay? Then, let's talk about the output as well. If the input are hardware that allow data to be entered into the computer, then what about the output? The output helps to be able to display information to the computer, right? From the computer. Now, okay, you can see that an output device shows the computer output in a form that is understood by a human. So it simply means that if you can be able to make sense of what is on the screen, then probably that data is outputted. Okay, so input devices. Input devices. As we said, a conclusion of everything we've talked about is any hardware device, right, that allows a user to enter data or instructions into a computer directly. So there are any hardware device, it allows you to be able to enter data or instructions. Then output, on the other hand, is any hardware device that takes the output data from a computer and puts it into a human readable format or uses it to control another device. Yeah. Now, you need to control the device. You're wondering how? Okay, I get you. I know you have those questions. I'm going to answer right here in this video. Now, you need to control another device. It talks about when you have like two monitors, right? And you want to either extend your screen or whatever. At that point, you can actually use, there's a main monitor that can control other monitors as well. Okay? Yeah. An input device can send data to another device, but it cannot receive data from another device. Its input, it can send. In the case of the output, it is capable of receiving data from another device in order to generate an output, but it cannot send. So input can send, but cannot receive. The output can receive, but cannot send. Hope that makes sense. An input device are necessary for a computer to receive command from its user, okay? And data to process. So when it receives it, it's able to process that command, that instruction. The device is under the control of the user or can be in the form of data direct entry, right? That has no form of human interaction, a little of it. IP device on their hands are needed by a computer so that it can share the result of its processing with a human. Input device, on the other hand, right, can be fairly complicated because they have to ensure that the user can interact with the computer correctly. But output devices are less complex than input because they only have to just turn computer signals into the output. Is it too much? I hope not. Backing storage. Now, backing storage are used to store large amount of data, right? And that's what the backing storage is, right? So it can take the form of internal, right? And known as either your HDD or your SSD. Now, the computer main internal storage where the application software, your operating system, files, etc., etc., are stored, right? Now, a key feature of the backing store is that it must store data permanently. That is, it must be non-volatile. That's the backing store. It's different from your internal memory. You need to know that. So we'll talk about the backing store. They are used to store large amount of data, such as your files, your application, right? Even your operating system, etc. Unlike your RAM and ROM, backing storage is not directly addressable. That is, it cannot be read by the CPU. Anything that can be read by the CPU is your internal memory. And I'll show you right here. See this? Right here. Right? So this is actually being read by the CPU. But anything like your RAM and ROM that is not directly addressable, right, it cannot be read directly by the CPU. So that's one way to look at it. So one way to see the difference between, okay? Now, the Data access time for RAM and ROM is much shorter than it is for backing storage, right? So backing storage is considerably larger than RAM because it is less expensive per byte. So let's look at the difference between internal memory and backing storage. Now, for RAM contents are lost, right, where computer is powered down, okay? And another one is the ROM contents are readable only. Yeah, they're readable only. When in case of backing storage, they hold their content permanently, even when there's a power down. The RAM and ROM are smaller memories, are much smaller memory than backing storage. The backing storage have considerably large capacity to store data than the RAM. Data access time on RAM and ROM is extremely fast because it is directly interacting with the CPU, right? So fast. But the backing storage has the slow, a much slower access time because it is a backing storage. It has large files. So obviously if it's large, it means it's going to take a lot of time. But we're not talking about the time here because the access time is, are you looking at it from the point of the HDD or the SSD? So you're just putting it in categories, okay? Because it's fab. You know, access time is fast, extremely fast, but not fast as the RAM and ROM, no. Fast as RAM. It is much expensive per byte than backing storage device. It's cheaper, right, than the RAM and ROM, okay? The RAM and ROM are fixed inside the computer, their internal memories. But the backing storage can either be fixed or can be removable. Yeah, I have a backing storage right here, and I'll show you right here in a minute. And right here, this PC, you can see that I'm having two right here. This is the SSD, this is the HDC, right? But it's a backing storage. It means I can eject, right? Okay. Now, the RAM and ROM can be read directly by the CPU. We've talked about this. And of course, before data can be on the backing storage device, it can be read by the CPU. But it must first be moved into the RAM. This means backing storage is not directly addressable by the CPU. We've talked about this. So before any data on the backing storage can be read, it is now moved into the RAM. Okay. So we're going to stop here, and in our next video, we're going to be looking at the operating system. Do have a nice time. Bye-bye. Hey guys, welcome to Ejiro Tech, and this is the part 3 of the types and component of the computer system. And we're looking at operating system, and one of the things you need to understand about the operating system is when we talk about the operating system, we're talking about communicating with the computer system. We're talking about what enables the computer to function, and we're talking about a special software that is installed into the computer system, and there various tasks that this operating system can perform, right? So let's look at it from the list we have here. We have dealing with errors that occurs in application program. Yeah, we have maintaining security of the whole system. We have maintaining a computer log. We talk about we have allowing communication between the user and computer system, talking about the user interface. And of course, the control of the operation of the input, output, backing storage. We know that. Supervising the loading, running, storage of application programs. Yeah. Now, the next thing is the user interface. Because the operating system offers various types of user interface. We're just going to talk about the ones that are like trending, you know, like day in, day out, they're like trending. We have the command line interface. We have the graphical user interface. We have the dialogue-based user interface. and we have the getter, the gestures, the base user interface. But the command line and the graphical are usually the kind of questions you would expect from a typical operating system, right? So let's look at it. Let's explore it a bit. Good, we have pictures, so that makes it super easy. If you're wondering about how the command line looks, simple, right? So we have like cmd, and you could do like window plus run, and you have like your cmd, and you have this here, right? Right, still the same thing with PowerShell, right? They both do the same thing. Okay, so we either we have this here, or you have the command line. Now, the command line requires a user to type in instructions to choose from menus. Open softwares, there are numbers of commands that can be used to type in. Okay, numbers of commands, okay? Now, for example, we have this. Let's go back to command line. And we have maybe directory. See what happens, a lot of directories. We just explain all the folders, okay? All the folders. And we can have like maybe CCD, and that's to go back. We have CD, and CD, and we can have maybe, if it's Java here, okay, cannot find the file path. We have Windows, okay, let's maybe we have users. Okay, CD, we have users. Okay, cd users. Okay, you know what, it's fine. We can actually look for them here. So actually we are actually here at Windows, and in Windows, okay, now, okay, so I have to go back to do maybe a cd again. Good, so I have this, so I can have cd users. Good, see that I have users. And what else do I have? And maybe I have CD Agile. Good, I'm now in Agile. Okay, and now we can find the directory for Agile. You can see that we have contacts, document, download, favorite, HTML, links, music, the whole package. And I can just close this just by doing exit. Okay, so close, right? So we have an idea. Okay, so we use them to key in these commands every time an operation has to be carried out. However, the advantage of the command line interface is that the user is in direct communication with the computer. Direct communication. And it's not restricted to numbers of predetermined options. So that is one key thing, one cool thing, right, about the command line. You are in direct communication. Okay? Apart from the fact that there are often numbers of commands that you just have to memorize, you know, that you need to type in, but you're in direct communication, okay, which is actually pretty cool. All right, the next one we're going to look like, next one we're going to talk about is the graphical user interface. The Windows 11 is a key thing. The use of icons, we can open anything we want to open because it's so easy, so accessible. And that is why the graphical user interface, because it allows you to be able to interact with the computer. Okay, if you want to play a game, you want to listen to music, you want to open pictures, so many things. And this is known as icons. Okay, rather than having to type in the numbers of command, for example, the whole of the command line codes, right, you can just replace it by just clicking a desktop icon. For example, I want to go to Agile, right? So I could just do this. My Windows Explorer. Okay, maybe Fire Explorer. Okay, and I have this, right? And I can just, instead of typing all those things, I can just, okay, users, okay, Agile, okay, and maybe I just go to okay, Apple. Okay, I want to go to anything I want to go to, so it's easier that way. Maybe I go to OneDrive. Okay, get started with OneDrive. So it's easier for me. It's the whole process becomes super easy. So we select the icons and they automatically execute. Okay, yes, the GUI, which is the GUI interface, use various technologies and devices to be able to provide that user interface. One of the most common is what we have, the WIM, which is the Windows Icon Menu and Pointing Device. That's what helps us to be able to provide user interface. Okay, and of course, they're developed for PCs, right? Your personal computers. Okay, and this is right here. Settings, Windows, About. So right here, this laptop is 11th gen, Core i5, and yeah, it's an HP Pavilion 14. Okay, so yeah, so this is actually cool. Right, so this is what helps us for PCs. The Windows icon, the menus, these are the menus we have, right? You can have them right here in your terminals. That's to run your terminals. You could sign in, you could sign out. There's so many things you could do. Your icons, pointing, this is a pointing device right here, and these are your menus that you can, you know, as much as possible, you can just explore them, right? I'm using Windows 11, so probably click on all apps, and you can have all your apps right here, right? This is your menus. It makes it so accessible to you. For each of those applications you have, each of them has a menu, okay? Yeah, they have a menu, okay, that you can actually work with, okay? In every of the applications you open, any of the applications, there are menus. You can work with them. It helps you to navigate. Okay, right here I'm using the Microsoft Edge, and there are menus right here that I can actually work with. Okay, you could actually use a mouse to control or use of your touchpad. That's if you use the PC. Now, this is what we call the desktop environment. It contains an application and modern computer system that allows several windows to be open at the same time. So you can set to open. For Windows 11, you have them in tabs. So you can open so many of them in tabs. Okay? For Windows 10, okay, you just have to open them, you know, so many windows, right? A Windows manager looks after the interaction between Windows, the applications, and the Windows system. Okay? Devices like touchscreens, smartphones, tablets, yeah, they use that. The same thing right here. They make use of that. On your smart device as well, they make use of that, right? The use of your touch screen, it makes it easy and accessible for you. Okay. Where the fingers are in contact with the screen, allowing for interaction. Now, let's look at the advantages right here. Command line and the GUI. For the advantage, the user is in direct communication with the computer. That's cool. In the GUI, the user does not need to learn any command. There's no need to learn any command. You want to go to Word? Just type it here. No command. The user is not restricted to a number of predetermined options. You're not restricted because you can explore the computer with your commands. For the GUI, it is more user-friendly, so icons are used to represent the applications. Another advantage for the command line, it is possible to alter computer configuration settings. Yes, because you could alter them. But with GUI, it's a pointing device, right, such as your mouse, which is used to click on icon to launch the application and the whole story. Now, let's look at the disadvantage, real quick. Disadvantage could be, the user needs to learn numbers of commands to carry out basic operations. True. And we could see that this type of interface uses up considerably more computer memories than the CLI. Because you're using icons, you're using menus, a lot of memory will be consumed. You have an operating system to begin with. Now, this user is limited to the icons provided on the screen. Okay, they're limited, provided icons on the screen. Another key thing about disadvantage could be each command must be typed in using the correct format. So if it's not in the correct format, yeah, errors in the spelling, you saw that recently, right? It didn't go through. You couldn't recognize it. It typed in the right command. For GUI, it needs a more complex operating system such as Windows to operate, which can be slower to execute the commands. So the question is, what would you use? Who would use each type of interface? For the CLI, the programmers, the analysts, the tacticians, those are the people that use it. Because you want to develop a new software, you want to locate errors, you want to move them. But for the GUI, they're just the end users who don't have to worry about, they don't need to have the great knowledge of commands. Okay? They don't need to. Now, let's just briefly look at the rest of them. Dialogue-based user interface, right? It uses the human voice, that dialogue, to give commands to the computer system. Okay? Like your cars, right? You can say, hey, BMW, drive me to the nearest airport, right? So that's dialogue. Right, you have your Siri, you have your Microsoft Cortana, you have Amazon Alexa, right? So you interact by speaking to the device. So you're using your voice to give commands. That's called a dialogue-based user interface. Okay, so you can say, hey Alexa, when's the next flight to Papo? Like, okay, from Terminal 1, would you like me to make a booking? So yeah. Gestures-based interface relies on human interaction by the moving of hands, heads, or even feet. Okay, so gesture interactions allow user to interact with the computer with a more natural fashion without the need of any mechanical devices. Now, we use this technique, we call it computer vision or image processing. Okay, that's what we use it for. Okay. So you could rotate your finger clockwise, and even some gaming has some that gesture-based interface. Okay? Okay. So advantages, for dialogue, there's no need for drivers to take their hands off the wheel. Okay? For the gesture, replace mechanical input devices, because you can actually use your hands to actually key in those things. So, in home, it's very useful for people with disabilities, because many tasks can be carried out by spoken words only. Coming to the effect of IT, right? In our homes, we'll talk about that. I think that is in chapter 5. We still have a long way to go, so stay with me. No physical contact is required for gesture. And another advantage for the dialogue is possible to use as a security feature, because a voice recognition could be used to identify a person. Now that is seen as biometrics. It's something you're going to encounter when we look at chapter 8. Yeah. We're talking about physical and security of data. Security of data. Yeah. You're gonna come to biometrics. Okay. No training needed to interface with the computer. You're using your hands, so there's basically no training. Disadvantage could be for the dialogue, still unreliable, with many commands not being recognized or needed to be replaced severally. It's still not perfect, okay? Because these are softwares. There's need for more testing and testing and testing. It can be quite complex to set up. Quite complex to set up, okay? And because these disabilities people, they need to know how to use it. So it's not easy to set Alexa or Siri up. It's not easy to set them up. User need to know which command can be used. They need to know how to activate it by saying Alexa, or know the commands to use that Alexa is able to understand, okay? For the gesture, it's possible for international movement to be picked up. So maybe what you did, you're not intentional about it. It can be picked up. It can only work fairly near to cameras or sensors. So if you're not really close to that proximity, it may not work. And it can only accept a limited numbers of movement. So if you're not moving the way you should move, then probably it's not going to save. And this is where we'll call it today. See you in chapter 4. We'll talk about the types of computing. For now, bye-bye. Hi everyone, welcome to Agile Tech. So in this video, we're going to be looking at the part four of it, which is the types of computer. We were talking about the types and components of the computer system. Now, there are various types of computer system in existence. Okay, and the first one is the desktop computers right here, and which is actually a popular computer. Because I want to believe everyone has seen a desktop computer, right? So it's usually referred to as what we call a general computer, and that is made up of several, you know, components. Like we have the monitor, we have the keyboard, we have the mouse, we have the system, you know, what we call the processor, which is embedded in the motherboard. A laptop computer, in fact, is made up of a numbers of separate components, which makes them not very portable, right? So this computer is not very portable because they're made up of several components. So it means that it's not easily moved around. You can't just move them around, the desktop computers. Now, if you look at the laptop, you look at the desktop, they are all used for similar purposes, right? And we can make a comparison out of them. Okay, let's see between the laptop and between the desktop. Okay, you can see for the advantages of a desktop over a laptop, let's look at it. The spare parts and connection tend to be standardized. Now, talking about the spare parts, for the desktop computer, it's easier to just replace any damaged parts or to upgrade it, unlike the laptop that is embedded in it. So it's easier for the desktop. Well, desktop computers are easier and they're less expensive to upgrade, expand. Desktop tend to have a better specification. For example, you could decide to make a faster processor, okay, for a given price, but you know, your laptop comes with embedded, right? So it's not everything you can change on your laptop. Power consumption is not critical because they usually plug straight to a wall socket. And the larger casing allows for a better dissipation of any heat due to. Okay, another advantage is they are fixed in one location, so there's that less likelihood of them being damaged or stolen. Okay. Internet access can be more stable because the desktop is more likely to be a wired internet connection. Okay, disadvantages could be they're not very portable, which is the most obvious, right? Because they're made up of separate components. So that is straight up for me. You don't need to think too much to get that. They tend to be more complicated because all components need to be hooked up to be, they are hooked up because they are all connected by wires. And apart from the fact that we do have wireless, they cluster up the desk space, unlike a laptop. Which you have your monitor here, you have your keyboard here, you have your mouse here, you have your system unit there. Because they're not very particularly portable, it is necessary to copy files on, for example, a memory stick when you want to do some work elsewhere. So it's not portable, so you just use a memory stick, copy the files, and then we take it to some else computer to work. Okay, let's look at the main uses of the desktop computers. Be used for office and business work, educational use, gaming, entertainment, whatever you use a laptop for, you can use it for the desktop. Okay. Mobile computers. Okay. Mobile computers, by their very name, suggest a group of computers which are considerably more portable than desktop computers. So any computer that is portable, it is known as what we call a mobile computer. We have our laptops, we have our smartphones, we have our tablet, we have a phablet. For the laptop or notebooks, the recent ones are called notebooks. There are types of computers where the monitor, the keyboard, the pointer device, and the processor are all together in one single unit, which makes it extremely portable. Key feature you would expect to find in a laptop: lightweight, low power consumption, low heat output. Okay. So what are the advantages of laptop when compared to desktop? The most obvious is the portability. It can be taken anywhere because all the units are all in a single unit. Because everything is in a single unit, there is no trailing wires, okay? Because only one single cord is used, right? Which is your charging, obviously. They're made up of, they take up less room on a desk, so they can be used anywhere. In a cafe, in any shop, right? Their portability allow them to take full advantage of the Wi-Fi features because they can access any Wi-Fi anywhere. Because they are portable, they can link it to any multimedia system, mainly for your projector, so many things. Okay, there's always a saying, for every advantage, there can be a disadvantage. There's always a disadvantage hanging around. And no matter how good a thing is, there's still some things we still, there's still some downsides. We just have to look at it. So let's do that real quick. Because they're portable, it can be easier to steal. I guess, okay, I know that seems to be very, very, okay, too extreme, but yeah, it is what it is, right? Because if it's portable enough, somebody can just put it inside his bag and go with it, right? They have limited battery life, so the user may need to carry a heavy power adapter. Okay, so that is another disadvantage. The battery life is so limited. So you need to have that adapter just to. So the keyboard and pointing device can sometimes be more awkward to use because everything is just together. Especially if you're the type that's using, you're more comfortable with the desktop. You might find it a little bit awkward to you because you're having everything in one place. And that's why today some people prefer using the mouse even when they have a touchpad. Makes sense, right? Okay, I know you guys were like saying, how is this a disadvantage? But now I'm able to just put it in one place to you and then, okay, fine, it makes sense. I'm sorry. It's not always possible to upgrade them. For instance, by adding more RAM, it's not always possible to do that. And that is a disadvantage. The same use you use, like I said, the same use for your desktop is the same use for your laptop. Office work, educational use, general gaming, streaming, a lot of things, right? Monitoring, give it to money monitor. You can use it for controls as much as possible. Smartphones, right? On the top of the shelf, smartphones. I think this is one of the things that is really trailing a smartphone, right? Everybody has a smartphone. Whether you're having it, hanging it around with it, using it, you're not using it. I don't use my phone too often. I'm more comfortable with my laptop. I don't have it. I don't. The flexibility of using my phone is. I'm more comfortable with the laptop because everything I'm working is right here on the laptop. Maybe I use my phone if I'm going out. Okay. So yeah, pray for me, right? So okay. So smartphones allow normal phone calls to be made, right? And also have what we call an operating system, such as like an iOS, which is for the iPhone. Operating system, we have Android or Windows. Your Windows are for Nokia, your Androids are for your Technos and etc. etc. So it allows them to run in numbers of computer applications, and those applications are known as apps, what you call your applets. Okay, so you have them as your apps. You have, and you can get them from your Google Play Store, or you can get them from your App Store. Or you could get them from your Microsoft Store. Okay, if you're using the Windows, it's Microsoft Store. If you're using iOS, it's an App Store. If you're using Android, it's Play Store. They allow users to be able to send and receive emails, use a numbers of apps, use the camera features, with the like taking pictures, the picture, picture fix, right? Taking pictures. And videos for occasions you want to go anywhere. Just to bring up memories. And so on, right? Smartphone communicates with the internet either by using a Wi-Fi hotspot. If you're using, that is if your phone is 3G. 3G means third generation, if you're wondering what is 3G. I've been hearing 3G, I've been hearing 4G, I've been hearing 5G. It means third generation, fourth generation, and fifth generation of mobile network, right? So, I know. Now you know. Okay, some of the physical features of smartphones include high definitions, anti-glare display, front and back facing cameras. Now all this, like, I don't need to talk more on this. Like, it makes sense. Like, as I'm talking about them, you can actually picture them because you have a smartphone right there with you. It can also act as a webcam doing video calls over the internet. It's lower weight and longer battery life than the laptop. It uses Bluetooth for connections to printers and other devices. And this is literally true. When we come to input and output, probably, I think I have it here, the HP printer. Yeah, so it's called HP Smart, right? It's called the HP Smart. And this with this, you can actually connect it with your printer wirelessly. And whatever information you have here, you can actually print it out to your printer, right? So it's called an HP Smart, and you can get it from right here. You can see printables, you can see print documents, and you could add your first printer right here. You can click here, add your first printer. Okay, so probably I'll send you a description on the link of this video if you need it, or you send, you just put up a comment, and probably I can just you can go to the App Store, you go to the Play Store, Microsoft Store. It's called the HP Smart. You're gonna love it, especially if you're using a Wi-Fi printer. It makes a whole lot of sense. Trust me, you enjoy Okay, okay, so it is the use of the flash, talked about solid state memory and cloud storage as well. These are the numbers of sensors to carry the following functions: proximity sensor to detect if the device is close. For example, the ears, which allows you to block unintended touches. So it uses what we call that sensor, proximity sensor. So if you're making a call, for example, and you put it very close, you see that it goes off, right? It goes off. Okay. Yep, the accelerometer detects movement, orientation of the device. You can actually activate this as well. To display in front of you, to view videos, allow you to be more like a stairway in racing cars. So, yeah. Speech recognition, if you talk to, like, "Hey Siri," you know, and it comes up right here, right, to enable the user to add the device to look for things. Okay. For Android users, I think it's "Hey Google Assistant." No, I'm not really sure, but I think it should be. Okay. And I think for Windows, it's Cortana. I think they still use it that for as well. Okay.
I don't understand, I
No,
think,
I
but I
also.
can search the web for it.
No, thank you. Thank you. All right. So that's it. Okay. So now the new generation of smartphones are becoming even tinier and lighter because they make use of what we call the OLED. That is organic light emitting diode. Yeah, touch screens. All right. And then again, future smartphones will use OLED touch screens coated with that crystal. We've seen this, right? This allows them to use what we call the Li-Fi, which is similar to the Wi-Fi. I said that it is what we call a light rather than the radio wave. Okay. Okay. And yeah, they can be used during airplane flights because it does not use the radio wave, so it does not interfere with flight control system. That's another thing that is working. So new devices, they make it of that Li-Fi, right? Okay, which is the light instead of video wave. Okay, advantage of smartphones, they're very similar. They're very small in size and lightweight. Okay, you can use them to make phone calls, and you can also connect to the internet while you're on the move. Because they use Wi-Fi and mobile phone network, they can be used almost anywhere. Okay, they have apps which can use sensor data provided by the smartphone, like maps, etc. Right? So whatever you're going, you can just go on your app, on your map, right? And if you click on it, it just gives you. It's called Maps. That is the Apple Maps, and it can just search for what you're looking for, and gives you an estimation of that destination. Okay, for Android users, you get it what we call the Google Map, right? Yeah, they have a reasonable battery life compared to laptop. Disadvantages: small screens, okay, and keyboard makes it difficult to read. People don't find it easy typing with a mobile device, a smartphone, really. Okay, so it is more difficult and slower when typing things. Okay, unlike laptops and desktops that have a much bigger screen and much larger keyboards. Web browsing and photography can quickly drain the battery. If you're browsing, if you're doing photography, those two things, they consume batteries. So if you didn't know that, now you do, right? Memory sticks in most mobile phones is not very large when compared to laptops. So they use what we call a pen drive. You could sat in your pen drive here where you actually charge your phone. Like we have the memory stick, USB drive, right? What you call your flash drive, right? And there's also a pen drive to it. So you could actually stick it here and then transfer your files and then you can send it to laptop, right? Not all website features are compatible with smartphone operating system. So there's a need to use a system. To just a desktop, literally, or a laptop to just have access to some certain features. Okay, because of their small size, it's more easier to lose a smartphone. It can be stolen compared to laptops, easily stolen. We've had cases of people stealing phones, crazy, but it's true. Data transfer rate using mobile phone network can be slower than with Wi-Fi. So this makes streaming of videos and music, right, less than satisfactory at time because of the data transfer rate for using mobile devices. Now, tablets, tabs, right? Now, I know most of you have tabs, and so you can actually relate to this one, so, okay? I used to have a tab. I think I had the Microsoft Pro 6, but I'm not the type to have so many gadgets around, okay? So I had to just let that one go when I got a laptop. So I can't be having a laptop and a tablet and a smartphone. Oh, come on. I might as well just have something else, right? A desktop, okay, okay. All right. So tablets are becoming an increasing use type of mobile computers, right? They're very similar to the smartphones. They use touchscreen technologies. They don't have a conventional keyboard, okay? You just have to buy it. You have to buy it, right? And of course, the keyboards are usually more virtual, okay? And they're activated by just simply touching them with a finger or a stylus. You can buy them, which contain a normal size keyboard, okay? So you could buy the tablet, which a tablet casing. So it comes on its own, but you could buy a peripheral, which is like a keyboard to just help you do that. They also use the 3G, 4G, and 5G as well. Okay, so let's look at the advantages. Very fast to switch on, no time delay, wait for the operating system to load, fully portable, can use several apps as standard, no much heat, battery life of the tablet lasts longer. When the power button is pressed, it goes into standby, but remains connected to the internet. Okay, so the users can still hear alert when emails or other events are received. Disadvantages tend to be rather expensive when compared to laptops. Yeah, it's quite expensive. The Microsoft Surface Pro 6, depending on which one you get, is it Core i5 or Core i7, 256, I think that was about plus 280, 300, right? So, but yeah, you can actually use that to get a laptop. That's in Naira. If you're watching from your country, probably you can actually convert it to your country and see. Probably not quite expensive in your country, but yeah, cost, right? It's still quite expensive if you look at it, especially the latest tablets, especially if you're using a tab, right? So it's quite expensive if you look at it. It's quite expensive. So they often have limited memories or storage when compared to a laptop. Although some of the latest have like 1 terabyte, okay? Now the latest ones, right? It can be expensive to run. So talking about the networks, 3G, 4G, 5G, they're expensive to run. Typing on a touch screen can be slow and error prone content compared to a standard keyboard. Okay. Transferring of files has to be done through what we call an application at all. That is drag and drop facilities, which can be quite irritating to users. There are disadvantages. So laptop tend to support more type of file formats, okay, than tablets. And I think, okay, so let's talk about this, and then I think that will be all. Okay, let's talk about the phablets. Now, the phablets are more like your smartphones, right? And we're going to look at the difference between this and right here, right? We're going to look at the difference between. So let's talk about the phablets real quick. Some of the latest smartphones have been designed as hybrid between a tablet and a smartphone, which is referred to as what? A phablet. They have much larger screens than smartphones, okay, but are smaller than what? A tablet. Okay, so let's look at it. This is a smartphone. The inch will tell you the difference. Okay, like your iPhone Mini 13 is a smartphone. Your iPhone 13 Pro Max is a phablet. And then you have your iPad 2021. Now that is a tablet. Okay, so we use the inch to look at it. The inch is the difference. Now I know you guys did not know this by now, but now this is, trust me, this is going to be like second nature. So you just know if you're using a smartphone or if you're using a phablet. So if it's up to like 5.1 inch in size, then that's a smartphone. If it's between 5.1 and 7 inch, whether you're using an iPhone 12 Pro, or an iPhone 12 Pro Max, right, then that is a phablet. Then if it's over 7 inch in size, that is a tablet. I want that to sink in. Okay, so let's go. So like I said, it's similar. Now the uses of the smartphone, the tablet, and the phablet, right? They're used for entertainment, gaming, cameras, internet uses, global positioning system, telephone banking, internet access to social networking, instant messaging, office and business management, educational use. So many. Like literally, there are so many. Okay, there are so many when we talk about them. Okay, so thank you very much. And in our next video, we're going to talk about, just before I go, the Voice over Internet Protocol allows you to be able to make calls over the internet. You know them, right? So what are those examples that we have? Give me three examples of the Voice over Internet Protocol. I'm going to tell you one. Okay, so one is Google Drone. Yeah, Google Drone. Or what you call your Google Meet. Okay, let me give you another one. Spoiler alert. Okay, so you have Discord. Okay, so give me three. I'm waiting. And I'll see you in the next video. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Hey, and welcome to yet another series of the types and component of the computer system, which is chapter one of this textbook. And we'll be looking at the part five of it, which is emerging technologies. It doesn't really come out as much as we hope, but we do see one or two questions coming out from it. And it's important that we just know what it is. It's very, very important, especially when we're talking about artificial intelligence. This is the time we are seeing the fifth generation that dwells on artificial intelligence. So there's importance to this particular subtopic. Now, there are many definitions of the artificial intelligence. When we talk about AIs, we call AIs, right? And these are machines or applications that carry out tasks that require some degree of what we call intelligence. For example, the use of language, recognizing the person's face, biometrics, the ability to operate machinery such as a car, an aeroplane, a train, and so on. Analyzing data to predict the outcome of a future event. For example, weather forecasting. Now, we'll talk about AIs. They duplicate human tasks, which requires a kind of decision-making and problem-solving skills. Eventually, many tasks presently are done by humans will now be replaced by either robots or computers. And yes, the downside of it all is it can lead to what we call unemployment. But let's look at the bright side, right? There is that improvement in safety and quality of service and product. So let's talk about the impact of the artificial intelligence on everyday life. So whenever AI is mentioned, people think of it as a science fiction. Yeah, like it's a fantasy, you know, and they think of robots, right? The science fiction writers, you know, Isaac and a lot of them, right, went as far as producing his three laws of robotics. One is robot may not injure a human through actions or inactions. Robot must obey orders given by humans without question. And a robot must protect itself unless it conflicts with the two laws above. So many science fiction movies continue to fuel people's imagination with the slightly sinister interaction between humans and machines. However, AI goes way beyond robotics and covers many areas, such as ones you've seen right here in this picture. One is the autonomous vehicles, right? That is talking about having a driverless train, autopilot on aeroplanes, and future development, and they're working on it as well, talking about driverless cars. Cars will be driving on their own, okay? And these are prototypes that are being worked on. The next one is robotic arm, right? And of course, to help people who are amputated, right? People with disabilities to have a hand or a leg. And we've seen this in movies, okay? So it's actually real. We have the another areas it covers, robots used to help people carry what we call dangerous and unpleasant tasks. For example, bomb disposers, weeding of cars, car bodies, entering into a nuclear disaster area. Negative impact of artificial intelligence, okay? It could lead to many job losses in numbers of areas. Although it is true to say that the new technological job could also be created, right? People could also learn these technological jobs, but many jobs could be lost in manufacturing. But other roles are likely to be affected, such as buses, taxis, and train drivers as well. Dependency on this technology and the inability to carry out tasks done by robots. Okay, yeah, it could be an issue in the future. You depend on them to do everything for you. Loss of skills. If robots are doing everything, it simply means that it will come a time, and we are seeing this, people lack that basic skill to be able to carry out certain tasks. Extended reality. XR. Let's talk about we'll talk about extended reality. We're talking about the virtual reality as well. We're talking about real reality, right? Where is able to catch all terms for immense technology. And there are three most common examples of extended reality. We have the augmented reality, we have the virtual reality, and we have the mixed reality. Now, all this immersive technology extends the reality we experience by either blending the virtual and real worlds, or by creating a fully immersive experience. Now, because of this curriculum, we're just going to look at the two of them, which is the augmented reality and the virtual reality. So let's look at the augmented reality. Now, this feature includes, it allows user to experience the relationship between the digital, which is the virtual, and the physical, which is the real world, right? So there's that experience. Why it's virtual, it looks as if you're experiencing that real world. Okay, for my students, I'm going to post a video on the link in their classroom to also give them a glimpse of what I mean by the augmented reality. Virtual information on the objects are overlaid into real world situations. They use it to try to construct bridges to see how well it stands. And the real world is enhanced with digital details such as the image, the text, and animations. Users can experience this augmented reality through special goggles or smartphones or the phablet screens. The user is not isolated from the real world and is still able to interact and see what is going on in front of them. Examples include the Pokemon Go game, which overlay digital creatures into real world situations, and there are a lot of them. Now, in the future, augmented reality will have an impact on the following areas: safety and rescue operations, entertainment, right, where people are able to interact with characters, imagine the characters of your favorite film interacting with you at home, shopping and retail, which is one of the big areas, okay, using your smartphone cameras to try to make up and see how you look before you actually buy, okay. What area? Healthcare. Doctors can make use of this augmented reality to have a better understanding of a patient body. Softwares like the Echo Pixels enable doctors to use the this CT scan for patient to build up a 3D image of their body and help with the surgery and diagnosis. Virtual reality, which is very, very common. The ability to be able to take the user out of the real world environment into a virtual, which is unreal, environment. It is a construct to the augmented reality because the user is fully immersed in a simulated digital world and they have discovered that they are fully into it. Users must wear what we call a virtual reality headset or a head mounted display, which allows a 360 degree view of the virtual world. This fools the brain into believing they are walking into an ocean bed, or walking into an alien world, or into a volcano. This technology can be used to good effect in medicine, in construction, in engineering, and even in the military to try to fight your way into the enemy terrain. In the future, virtual reality will have an impact on the following areas: on military applications, that is for training, to operate a new tank, for education, looking inside ancient buildings as part of a history lesson, healthcare, to diagnose, to recommend treatment, entertainment, where you can want to just have interactions to players or even be a player to see how it feels. Fashion, to do fashion shows before doing the real thing. Heritage, to walk around. Businesses, engineering, sport, trying to play golf. Medias, scientific visualization. And there we have it. So thank you for watching. Please do what to subscribe. That's for me in chapter 1. Bye-bye.